Bigger than Hulk Hogan's bald spot. Funnier than Richard Pryor, George Carlin, and Louis C.K. combined. Better looking than... Wait.
It's a problem.
Seriously?
Just go.
No. Joe wrote this, didn't he?
Just read, please. Thank you.
You're listening to Two Nerds, One Podcast. Proud member of the Nerdessence Enterprises Network. Be good, nerds.
And we're recording. Yay! It's episode 127 of Two Nerds, One Podcast. I am Tim Church, and with me is...
Steve Copperin.
Yay! We're gonna, you know, just discuss our normal, usual nerdy stuff. Oh, thank you, sir.
Sure thing. Want to make sure you're comfortable.
Yes. what'd you get into this weekend? Anything nerdy?
Joe and I took a road trip down to Indiana to this wonderful toy mecca called Kokomo Toys and Collectibles.
Oh.
It's a cool place. There, if you're into, you know, old collector toys and even new collector toys, they have quite the selection. I myself ended up buying a wonderful reproduction of Snake Plissken from Escape from New York.
Excellent.
I dropped a couple hundred on that. But... It was well worth it. It's very detailed. They even have a hand you can take off so he can smoke a cigarette. He's got a little cigarette you can put in his hand so he can be smoking a cigarette. It was too good to pass up.
Like it needs like a little tiny little box of like American Spirit or whatever the hell
he's
smoking.
He's just got one little tiny thin ass cigarette that you can put in this special hand they designed to hold the cigarette. It's amazing.
Oh, well, that was a little loud. Sorry. That sounds awesome. So is it just like wall-to-wall, like collectible toys?
It's not
just action figures?
The emphasis like, really seems to be on action figures, but they have like really, you know, professionally done busts and maquettes, and they have glass cases that contain the really expensive...
Oh, yeah.
Statues. Some of them ranged upwards of $900.
Woo!
Joe bought a bunch of Buffy the Vampire Slayer collectibles.
Of course
he did.
Yeah. He loves him some Buffy.
He does.
I watched like a few episodes and I was like, all right.
I was the same. I could not get into the show. Sorry, Joss Whedon. Sorry, sorry, Buffy fans, but not my cup of tea.
Yeah, agreed. That's awesome. I would assume they had like 24-inch figures as well, like larger
they did.
Ones.
They did. In fact, me being a Star Wars nut, they had the complete Ewok village still in the box from 1983.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like the actual
Ewok place.
We had that growing up.
Yeah, they had it, and it was only like $100.
Really?
Obviously, it had been opened at one time
right.
and played with, but all of the pieces were there, and it still had the box.
What?
They had an AT-AT still in the box.
Excellent.
From 1980. And they had the Hoth playset from 1980 also still in the box.
Sweet.
So they had some really cool stuff there, but there wasn't a very big emphasis on vintage. It was mostly new collectibles.
Okay. Well, that's cool, too. So it doesn't... It didn't have the feel of an antique shop, basically.
Exactly. It wasn't,
yeah.
It wasn't for the vintage collector. It was more for the new collector.
Okay.
With some vintage.
That's cool.
But the store was fairly impressive. I mean, it was wall-to-wall action figures and And, oh, they had lunch boxes and old TV trays.
Oh, cool.
That was kind of cool.
Nice. Yeah, we had, I don't know, we had one of the, like, turrets from Hoth. You know, like, the with the flat head and just kind of, just the long gun.
Like the rebel turret. Gun turrets? Yeah, those are awesome.
We had one of those growing up along with Ewok playset. We had, we didn't have an AT-AT, we had the two-legged one.
Oh, the AT-ST.
Yeah. We had one of those. And all of this was like, it's all been bastardized because, I mean, there was three boys that had their hands on it.
You just beat the shit out of it.
It's true. Yeah.
Had we known what we know now.
Oh my gosh.
We never would have taken them out of the boxes, but hindsight is 20/20 because I had almost every one of the original action figures from the 77 Star Wars, the original release, because I was 8 years old when that came out.
Yeah.
And I had all of the action figures virtually. I even had the rare Jawa with the cloth cape that they then replaced with a plastic cape later on.
Yeah.
That one's worth like $1,500 now.
Jeez.
It's insane.
That's amazing. We had
the X-Wing and the Millennium Falcon.
We had the X-Wing. We didn't have the Millennium Falcon.
Did you have a snow speeder?
We had a sand speeder.
Oh, nice. The land speeder from the first film?
Yes.
Yep, I remember that.
And it was one of those that you could pull back until it starts to click,
yes.
And then you let it go, and it's like, then, of course, we were just bashing it into walls and stuff like that. We just ruined it.
Of course.
And, like, some of the panels you could flip up. I don't know if it's, like, damage or whatnot, but you could just kind of see, like, electronics underneath these little panels.
Oh, yeah,
kind of
like the, blaster scores.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Something like that. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I had the X-Wing, the Millennium Falcon. I had the TIE Fighter, and I had the Snowspeeder.
We didn't have too many of the action figures of the main people. Most of the stuff we got was just from, like, garage sales around the area.
Mm-hmm.
But one notable ones, it, like, lasted the longest, too, was... I don't know if he was the bartender or if he was in the band. It was the dude with the long, weird face that came up.
Hammerhead.
Yeah.
He was just one of the patrons.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had one of the original of him.
I actually have him upstairs on on the counter in the kitchen.
Getting into what I did this weekend, nerdly related, I guess... we end up going to Sawyer, Michigan to go visit Pete at Greenbush.
Oh, you saw Pete? Nice.
Yeah. Greenbush, they're going the way of Founders, but on a smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
But they will take over the rest of Sawyer, Michigan pretty soon.
Really?
With the exception of the Lion's Den. You know, you either go to the Sawyer's exit for the Lion's Den adult bookstore,
right.
Or you're going there for Greenbush.
So they have good beer?
Oh, they have great beer. And just ridiculous names for some of their beer, too. Like, one of their beers on tap was the Middle Finger of Buddha.
Nice.
And was actually very good. It was like a... Shoot dang. Some sort of... I think it was a darker, like, IPA or something like that. I don't know. But what they have done now is they bought a building across the street from them now,
mm-hmm.
And turned that into the Greenbush Annex.
Nice.
It's an outdoor beer garden.
Sweet.
They got two bocce pits.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Cool.
14 of their beers on tap. Not the full menu, but they have like cheese plates and charcuterie or whatever the hell that word is that I can never pronounce correctly.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
charcuterie?
Yeah, shark attacks over there. They haven't... It sucks, though, because the annex is just right across the street, but you can't get, you know, your beer from one and walk across the street to the other.
Because you're not allowed to have...
Right.
That sucks.
They need to put in
a skywalk.
I told Pete he needs a pedestrian bridge.
Yep, they need a skywalk.
But it would have to be, I would fear that it would have to be some sort of enclosed so that, you know, you don't have the jackasses like whipping their bottles at cars.
Oh,
coming
absolutely
across.
Yeah, it'd have to be closed. And like the ones downtown here in Grand Rapids, the
yeah.
Sky White.
Oh yeah,
that'd be perfect.
Yep. But then what I said to him, to simplify things, just make it underground.
Yeah, even better.
Just make it an underground tunnel. Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
And that wouldn't be too bad for their taps either, because they could just run lines underground.
Yeah, from one to the other.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
But it was awesome, and it was a great day yesterday, too. So
oh, yeah,
just
it was
got
beautiful
to just
out.
Sit out and...
Yep, it was a perfect day for...
Throw some balls.
Indiana had beautiful temperatures, nice people all around that we met.
Yeah. That's funny. When you guys... Did you guys come through... Like 31, or did you come
31.
Through like?
Yeah,
that's
we did.
Funny.
We did 31 to like 9:31, and then that led us directly into town to where this place is. And it's on this little. It's a pleasant little place too. It's Joe said it reminded him of the movie Pleasantville, because it's this old fashioned town where all the buildings are still that old 1800s style.
Sure.
And like Lowell, like here in Lowell.
Yeah.
It's. Except in a square instead of just one street straight shot through town, this is laid out in a square, and it's just that old style, quaint, 1800 style buildings, and it's really nice. And the way they've got it's like a nerd block where we were. There was a comic book shop on the very first, the very first door was a comic book shop, and
nice.
There was some sort of weird business like this old like vintage stuff, and then there was the toy store. And then, like, three or four doors up, there was the board game place.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was just a little nerd mecca right in that little one area.
Board games and hobbies, probably, like, mm-hmm. model trains and shit like that, too.
We didn't go in.
Model
airplanes. I'm assuming that there was probably stuff like that as well, but it happened to be, like, board game day or something like that, National Board Game
Day
when we were there.
Really?
Yeah, so there was some sort of event going on at the board game place, so we didn't go in.
Was there cosplayers?
Didn't see any cosplayers.
Huh.
I really didn't want to go in just because when they're gaming, you know, it's sometimes the odor of Mountain Dew and Fritos or Doritos gets a little overpowering. So
and funk.
And funk,
and just
right.
Straight up
and
funk.
Just straight up funk, so.
You're disturbing our magic game.
That's right. Sorry, nerds who like magic, but,
yeah.
You know, again, not my cup of tea.
I kept that card, I swear. Anyway. I used to, I dabbled when I was a teenager and
oh yeah, I used
magic.
To do D&D, but I was never like really into it. I never
right.
really got into it. I was always more of a video gamer.
Oh yeah, dude, game, yeah. Because TV is twice as fast.
That's right. there's real moving pictures.
Right. Oh yeah, with our fake wood paneling on our Atari 2600.
Oh yes, that was sleek. It was like the Woody of game systems.
Yeah, it really was. Oh, and it was breaking down all the time. It's a good thing my dad was like, he knew how to like solder stuff, because like transistors would like plink.
Oh yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, that thing was not. It was not sturdy when it first came out.
No, especially when you got three boys
yep.
that are like,
and the controllers always bit it.
Oh, or we'd have dogs that would always bite. We'd always have little teeth marks on the tip of
the tip,
joystick.
They were always gnawing on them.
Because they're rubber.
Right.
And
dogs love that.
Yeah. But you guys, like the way you guys came up, not too far from Sawyer, actually.
Oh, no, not really.
That's funny. If we could have coordinated later on in the day, we were just hanging out on Lake Michigan.
Oh, yeah, we could have easily done that.
Yeah. At just like this public park that... You know, we brought a six pack each, and we were just hanging out. My neck, I think, is burnt. Like, yeah.
Your first burn of
yeah,
the season
already. Awesome.
There's nothing wrong with that. That just means it was sunny.
Yeah. Ah, so that was my weekend.
Nice.
We had dabbled talking about this a little bit, and I was going to elaborate into the actual timeline. I saw Furious 7.
Nice.
Opening weekend, of course.
Right.
Because in IMAX, and it was actually my first IMAX.
Oh, that's the first time you ever went?
Yeah.
Now, was it in 3D, or was it just
it was
in
just
IMAX?
In IMAX.
You weren't that impressed?
I wasn't that impressed. Maybe if it was a different sort of movie.
Where did you sit?
Actually, we were in the last row.
The very back?
The very last row.
Those are the best seats.
And maybe it was just the type of movie it was. I really wasn't that impressed with the size of the screen. Someone was telling me that they saw, like, Gravity in the IMAX, you know, not 3D.
Yeah,
did you as well?
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. I talked to someone else about this, and they were like, because you could just see, like, the vastness of space.
Gave you a real sense of how isolated they really were.
Yeah.
And it gave you vertigo in some scenes because it was so, I mean, there was just so much happening.
And
I guess I would recommend a film in 3D on the IMAX. The 3D effects are fairly good in an IMAX presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But I find the movies to be impressive on the IMAX as well, too, just when they're not in 3D. But I guess that's because I know the dimensions of the screen. I mean, it's like three stories high.
Yeah.
It's gigantic. So it is a different experience.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that it's worth all the extra money.
Right.
I mean, I can see a few dollars more, but my God, the tickets.
Yeah.
They are kind of outrageous.
It's
always the same price, no matter what time of the day you go.
You
don't get a matinee price for IMAX.
It was 13 bones.
Yep.
Are 3D movies more than non-3D movies at the IMAX?
I have not found that to be the case, no.
Oh.
No.
Wow, wild. But it was good for what it was, though. I mean, I'm glad we were sitting way in the back. Otherwise, like, I would have been like, what's going on over here? And have to turn my head to find out what's going on in the other part of the... You know, I could just sit back, my eyes, you know, the perf...
Right.
See everything going on.
If you're
on.
Sitting too close in those, you're looking back and forth like it's like there's a tennis match going on, and that sucks because it's. I did that with one of the Matrix films. I saw it in the IMAX.
Oh,
we were sitting like just slightly forward of the middle section, and it was.
Is it the third
screen,
one? Revelations.
Yeah, it was the third one, and the screen. I mean, everything. My head was constantly back and forth. It ruined the whole experience, really.
Just couldn't take it all in. I bet. I saw all those movies in the theater. I loved that trilogy.
I did too. I mean, all the meaningless psychobabble aside, I thought that was an actual solid, pretty solid trilogy of films.
But getting back to Fast and Furious, kind of what we talked about earlier. Dumb fun.
Well, yeah.
It was big dumb fun.
Nice.
It was great.
You got what you expected, right?
And then some.
Right. Awesome.
Once again, it actually gets an extra thumb up just because...
You have three hands?
Yes. That's two thumbs and my penis.
Zip that.
Zip. Ding! Just because... No, it's a severed hand I keep with me.
Just carry it around.
A monkey paw.
Just like magicians, you just carry that extra coin around with you everywhere you go.
Yeah, exactly.
You happen to have that giant coin everywhere you go? 40-year-old virgin, sorry.
Yeah.
So you just carry around a giant coin wherever you go. Only sometimes.
Only sometimes. Because I was expecting, you know, once again, another Dwayne Johnson Vin Diesel beefcake party, basically.
Well, let's face it, these movies are sausage fests.
They
have the gratuitous shots of the cleavage and everything else, but for the most part, the films are sausage fests.
A couple of parties that they showed up to.
Like the car gatherings.
It was the gratuitous under-cheek shot.
Nice.
This time around.
Yep.
The skirts that only go halfway down their ass cheeks. And you could see, like, almost
were there any
the most
Daisy Duke
knuckle.
Shorts?
No, it was all thongs.
Thongs. Okay.
Yeah. They just screw it. Yeah, no Daisy Dukes, all thongs.
Yeah, every one of those has that moment in there where they, and it's always when they go to some sort of gathering that there are the scantily clad, like, really loose, slutty chicks everywhere.
Now that you're actually watching them, mm-hmm. you said, now, did you make it through the third one, or are you up to the third one now?
We made it through the third one.
Okay. It gets less because of storyline that they're actually trying to tell.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
So, yeah, they're getting less with the...
Because that makes it a little less douchey to me.
Exactly. A little less pop-collery.
A little less bro-centric.
This time around, The Rock is literally in three scenes.
Really?
He gets wounded in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
There's a hospital scene. And then he comes back towards the end.
Okay. So is that scene they show in the trailers where he's got that giant chain gun shooting at that's in there?
That's one of three scenes that he's in, yeah.
All right, okay. Yep. As long as I get to see him holding the chain gun and unloading on a helicopter, I'm good.
You do, my friend.
Nice.
You do.
It's very Jesse Ventura from Predator.
Yes!
With the big rail gun.
Yes,
that's all
exactly.
I could think of when I saw
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
Like, awesome.
Because it's doing the, like, side view, and he's doing the scream, just, yeah.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Yep, now I gotta see it.
Yep. And so, yeah, it was mostly more about, like, the team and whatnot.
Well, yeah, because he don't have friends. He has family.
He's got family.
That's right.
And I like the way they ended the movie was a really touching... Rush and Christy were crying.
Well, yeah.
Because of Paul Walker.
That's one of the things that that I've been reading consistently is that all these guys who are going in expecting this, you know, rah-rah action film, they're going to get what they want, but at the end, they're going to be walking out going, no, I got something in my eye, man.
Yeah.
No,
no, bro.
Something in my eye.
No, bro. No, it's this Stymon. I don't know.
Stymon.
And, yeah, it really was touching the way it ended.
Uh-huh. Are there homages to him in the credits sequences at all?
Or? Actually, just kind of in the end of the movie, actually. They kind of, you know, do a look back and they showed him, like, from the first movie with his douchey, like, curly
yes,
hair.
Yes, his curly hair.
And, yeah, they go back and it was touching. Well, I'm not spoiling it for, you know, people, but I don't know if,
well, it's
you know.
Well, like we talked about earlier, once the film has reached its opening weekend, I think it's pretty safe to talk about it.
It's true. I mean, if you haven't heard already, they don't kill off his character.
Right.
Which was, like, what I thought they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were just going to, like, you know, you finally have that daring jump, and you just miss.
Right, and then...
Like, you're reaching for the helicopter. There's really no reaching for helicopter scene, but, yeah, like, you finally reaching for the helicopter, Vin Diesel's got his hand out, and they miss.
And they do the slow fall-away, like, cliffhanger, where Stallone's trying to save the chick, and she's falling in slow motion.
Yep, exactly. That was a chick? Never
mind. That
was mind.
A chick in the, yeah, in the beginning of the film. That's why he stopped climbing.
Oh, no, I meant the other gal that was in Cliffhanger. She was very...
Oh, Janine Turner.
Yeah,
she was from Northern Exposure.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Wow.
So they didn't kill off his character. He just kind of faded into the sunset. And
right,
it was
fitting,
it was very well done, very tasteful. It was just... There was a scene where you knew it wasn't Paul Walker.
Right.
Because he had his other two brothers fill in for some scenes.
They were stunt doubles for him.
Yeah.
Right? Body doubles.
There was one scene where you could tell that they did not do... It was a darkened warehouse with flickery lights that you couldn't see Paul Walker's face.
Right. Well, his death put an enormous damper on the production. I mean, they had to halt production.
Oh.
And they had to rewrite furiously. They had to furiously rewrite... Furious 7,
right.
To accommodate for his death so that it would
yes.
work, so that they could make the film work without him.
Yeah. One of the last scenes is the crew is looking at Brian O'Connor,
right.
You know, with his wife, and... You can tell, you know, that it's, you know, just similar build, that it's, you know, one of his brothers in the distance.
Right.
You can tell the crew, just by the looks in the crew during that scene, you can tell that they were staring at a ghost.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have seen pictures, photographs of, it's Cody and I can't remember the other one's name.
Yeah.
But it's eerie how similar to him they are, like the build and everything.
Yeah.
Not, I wouldn't quite call them twins, but, you know, they're, it's obviously, you know, Walker's family, you can tell.
Yeah. So, the timeline is all weird now, because if you haven't seen the sixth one yet, whatever, I mean, you already knows what happened. If you've seen Tokyo Drift, which was the third movie,
right?
Jason Statham character kills Han. And so the timeline actually goes The Fast and Furious, which is the one, you know,
right,
back in 2001, then Too Fast, Too Furious, which is
the most ridiculous one so far.
Yeah.
Cause I thought
Vin
Tokyo
Diesel wasn't in the second one, and correct?
He was not.
Yeah.
Tyrese,
that's where they introduced Tyrese, right?
Yep. That's Tyrese. And Vin Diesel, I think they show him in a post-credits sequence.
Oh.
Maybe I'm incorrect. Maybe that's Fast and the Furious, the first one where they show Vin Diesel. Yeah, they do. They show him driving in the desert at the end of the Fast and the Furious.
Yep.
But in Too Fast, Too Furious, I don't think he makes a single appearance.
No. Yeah.
Not once. But he does pop up in Tokyo Drift at the very end.
Oh, does he? Okay. Yeah. All right. And then so as far as the timeline goes, then you skip that one and you go to the fourth movie, which is Fast and Furious.
Okay.
You know, it's not The Fast and the Furious.
Right, it's
Fast and Furious.
The titles on these have gotten increasingly ludicrous.
Oh, yeah.
To try and use at least one of the words, it's hilarious.
So, and then in the timeline, it's then Fast 5, mm-hmm. which I thought was probably one of the sweetest ones in the whole series so far. You'll see it. It's good. It's good. Then came Fast and Furious 6, which I believe was the one that introduced The Rock.
Yep.
Yeah.
Except the end, it says.
Yeah. In the timeline, it's, you know, it goes 1, 2, 4, Fast 5. Fast and Furious 6, except the end. It's right before the credits, before Jason Statham shows up. Then it's the beginning of Furious 7 that's in the timeline. And then Tokyo Drift hits. And then it's the rest of Furious 7.
Right, afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the rest of the Furious 7 film. And then leading up to Furious 8, which we know will now get made for sure with the success, because this movie is breaking all sorts of box office records.
Yeah.
It is by far the most successful one in the franchise.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing here with this business. I don't know. Well, there's... Okay, see, they jump back from 6 to Quick 7, and then Tokyo Drift, then back to 7 and 6. Because, yeah, he actually... Statham actually calls The Rock at some point. He calls The Rock... he calls Vin Diesel at the end of 6, right after he kills Han. And then that phone call happens during the 7th movie.
I see.
After Tokyo Drift takes place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then you watch the end credits of Tokyo Drift, and then you watch the rest of Furious 7.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So, I like how they say it's for dummies, but it's like that's actually fairly convoluted.
It really is, yeah. I like how they call it the super simple Fast and Furious
super
timeline.
Super simple. There's nothing really simple about it. How many steps was that? Like 13?
Yeah. Something like that. So I have no idea what they're going to do with the 8th one. Because it's already been announced.
Right, because they were saying this was going to be, you know, the end of it. But we knew it would be successful. So why would you stop making something that's a cash cow like that?
They're just not going to have Brian O'Connor in it.
Exactly.
And that's okay.
And maybe it'll be one of his brothers.
You know what? I thought maybe they could give it a rest and give it like 15 years until they make the next one.
Introduce, like, a whole new set of characters?
Nope, because then what brings the crew back together could be, like, could be Jack O'Connor gets into some trouble.
Okay, so, like, his brother...
No, his son.
His son?
His son's 5 in Furious 7.
Oh.
And so in 15 years, he'd be 20.
Who's the mother of this of his son?
Mia.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Vin Diesel's character's...
Sister. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So...
Good grief.
Yeah, so, you know, they could do a movie with his son.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And
they could have his son be played by one of Paul Walker's brothers.
Yes. Oh, yes, exactly.
That would work.
Yeah. So
although that would be weird if you were the guy if you were the brother that was playing I'm supposed to be my own brother's son. That's weird.
Ooh. Whoa, dude, my mind just blew up.
You'd have to separate that obviously from your character, but in the back of your mind you'd be like, I'm playing my brother's son. How fucked up is that?
You knew that Kurt Russell's in the 7th one, right?
Yep.
Okay, that'd be cool if they threw some more of that in the 8th one.
Some more Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
They said that his character is actually pretty cool.
He is actually pretty cool.
And they leave you wanting more of him.
And then I'm just like, yeah, just give the man an eye patch already for me. Just give me an eye patch so that we can have Snake Plissken. That'd be hilarious if just like a... They would have put an eye patch on him.
That would be awesome. The ultimate homage to Snake Plissken.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised they didn't... So, Fast and Furious aside, you know, just movie nerding it out a little bit more, I'm surprised they didn't roll with the Snake Plissken character in more movies.
Oh, me...
Was it just because of how bad Escape from L.A. did?
I think so. In fact, it's funny, too, because me and Joe were actually just talking about that yesterday. Escape from New York is one of my favorite films from the 80s. It had a very serious tone.
I still haven't seen it.
Really?
I own it.
You gotta see it. It had a very serious tone. It's a dystopian future, which I love, stories that take place in a dystopian future.
Yes. Mad
the
Max.
The entire island of Manhattan has been made into a prison.
Yep.
The president's plane crashes, and Snake Plissken, who is a former soldier turned thief, basically criminal, is recruited by this sadistic... he's not really sadistic. I can't really say that. He knows that Snake is the right man for the job.
Right.
He brings him in and forces him... under penalty of death due to this little countdown timer he's wearing. He's got a little charge placed in him that's going
right.
to blow his head off, basically, if he doesn't complete the mission. He's sent in to find the president in this prison. And it is
It was the president's plane that went down?
The president's plane that went down. He has to find the president of the United States.
First of all, if he didn't die in the plane crash...
There's
the
escape pod.
No, I mean, if he didn't die in the plane crash, that pilot needs to be fired. For why would you even occupy that airspace go over there?
That's just it. I can't remember what the
was it diverted for some reason.
No, it was just something went wrong with the plane. It was just happenstance.
Okay, but still,
as they were there's an escape egg. It's like a little egg.
Okay.
The president
that's
gets
hilarious.
Into it.
All right,
they eject it from the plane. Where the fuck does it go? Of course. Manhattan, the prison.
Yeah.
That's where it gets sent to. Where it comes down. So he has to go in, find the president. He's got sensitive documents with him, obviously.
Oh, right.
And Snake has to get back in a certain amount of time, or he will be executed.
Right.
So it's just a great, serious-toned movie. And then they did Escape from L.A., so many years later, which was
told the same story,
right,
but
it was tongue-in-cheek. It was campy.
Oh, it was campy.
It was everything the first one wasn't. And that's why I hated it.
I like it just because it's my big dumb fun. Well, I think it's big dumb fun.
That was Joe's thing, too. He's like, if you look at it as a standalone film, having nothing to do with Escape from New York, is it entertaining? I'm like, to me, no, it's still a shitty movie, but it is funny. It does have its moments. I mean, it's so unbelievably over the top. I guess, yeah, it's for pure entertainment value, okay. But for an Escape from movie?
Wow.
No, bad.
I really didn't know that there was 15 years that separated the
yes,
two.
It was.
Holy
yeah, because look at how much
shit.
CGI was in that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what?
And the first one was, what, 1980?
You mean Peter Fonda didn't actually surf that wave
yeah,
in the,
come on,
say,
I mean,
in the San Andreas
all that,
or whatever?
All that cheese that was in there? I mean, it was so bad. And then you watch the hoodie. First one, it's all practical effects. It's all
okay.
real stunts. It's all dirty, gritty, grainy. I love that. I love the first one.
So,
and I wish that that had been a franchised character.
I think the fact that the way you described Escape from New York, they retold it in Escape from L.A. President's daughter was part of California, drifted off. They turned it into a prison. The president's daughter ran away from home because she's a little bitch. Like, fell in love with, like, this cartel leader who runs the show.
Yep, right. It is. It's a rehash of the same damn story, but told stupidly.
They hire, the president hires Snake Plissken.
Right.
They put a poison in him. Time sensitive.
Right. It's the same damn movie.
And then, like, right at the end, like, yeah, there was no poison.
Right.
Type of thing.
It was just, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was such a lazy idea.
I like right at the end, though, where Snake kind of fucks everyone over.
Yeah.
And turns out the lights. And I don't know if the country or the planet or whatever, but he knocked off, and all you could see right at the end is him lighting a cigarette.
Yep. I mean, you know, again, Russell played the character.
Oh,
to perfection.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure he had a blast doing it. It was campy.
But it was very campy. And that's the one thing that I resented about it. It's like, it was the same storyline. I'm like, so, number one, it was lazy writing. They did have some memorable characters in it. Bruce Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
As the Surgeon General.
The Surgeon General.
He was nuts.
Oh, yeah. Steve Buscemi as Map of the Stars Eddie.
Right.
Oh, and yeah, I like how it was Cliff Robertson was the president.
Yep.
Yeah,
in the first film, the president of the United States is Donald Pleasance.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I know who that is.
He was the doctor in the first Halloween film.
Oh.
The one who
Oh!
Yeah, see, he was his
He was a Nazi. Wasn't he in some movie? Didn't he play, like...
He was Blofeld in one of the Bond films.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of. He wasn't a Nazi, but he was, like, German. He was. Yeah, with a monocle.
Yep,
and,
that's
yeah.
exactly right. And he had the white cat.
Yep, exactly. I can't remember which Bond movie. Anyway. You Only Live Twice, 1967.
Yep. Wow.
Pam Grier as I can't remember what her character was, La Plamas or whatever her. Jeez, who was actually a dude? Like Plissken knew him, but then it was Pam Grier, and yeah.
I mean, it was over the top. It was. But like I said, you know, some memorable characters, but overall just a really lazy script. It was a retread of the original. I just wish they'd given him other things to do, like other movies to do. He would have been so good. Explore his life when he was a criminal after he was a soldier.
Oh, they could have totally did a, what the hell was Vin Diesel's character?
Riddick?
Riddick. They could have totally did a Riddick situation.
Absolutely.
With him. I think if they found the correct casting, Kurt Russell is, obviously, he looks real old. He looks real old in Furious 7.
He is, I guess he would qualify as real old?
I mean, not just age-wise, like, it shows in his skin. Like, he couldn't play Snake Plissken again now.
No, not unless he was retired Snake Plissken.
Yeah, because he was born in 51, which would make him 60, like, 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's starting to show, definitely.
If the casting was right, they could kind of go back in time. And, because, you know, why not?
Well, look, let
us know how Snake Plissken lost his eye.
They're replacing, you know, Mel Gibson with Tom Hardy. And I think...
For what?
For Mad Max.
Right.
Tom Hardy's playing Mad Max, and I think that, you know, I don't think I'm going to bat an eyelash. I'm not going to miss Mel at all.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Stargate. That was a good movie. But, so, yeah, I need to watch Escape from New York.
You definitely do.
Even though, even because I own it. Or actually, I borrowed it from a friend mm-hmm. 10 years ago.
10 years ago? Okay. So it's yours now, essentially. That's really, you might as well just say, that's yours. I think the statute of limitations on borrowing is exceeded after like 6 months. That's yours.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, moving along, though, I watched a preview of it. What do you think of Spectre?
Oh, very, very excited for Spectre.
Yep. Because we obviously mentioned You Only Live Twice. I love Bond movies.
I do too. And people are gonna smirk and scoff at me, but I have to honestly say, I am a huge fan of the Connery Bond.
Yes.
I'm a fan, not a huge fan, but I'm still a big fan of the Roger Moore films.
Oh yes.
I even liked Timothy Dalton.
Yes.
In the two films he was in. And I loved George Lazenby the one time he played Bond in
yep.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service. I thought he nailed it. That being said, I think, for my money, the Bond films with Daniel Craig are some of the best, if not the best Bond films ever made.
I agree. Thank you for not mentioning the one I hated the most.
Never Say Never Again?
No, Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, nope. That's why I didn't mention it.
Yep, exactly.
They have really good action set pieces, but I think
he was put in just as the sexy Bond.
Yeah, he was way too much of the pretty boy Bond.
Yeah.
At least Moore and Dalton and Connery had that kind of rough and tumble, you know, kind of little bit of burliness about him.
Yes.
I mean, Roger Moore was obviously a little bit more effeminate, but he was more of the ladies' man Bond. But
yes.
He made that character work for him because he was in more Bond films than anybody else.
Who?
Roger Moore.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He was Bond
oh,
more times
I loved
than anybody
Roger
else.
Moore in even though he was...
He really
was kind of a ladies' man, but yeah, he was a little effeminate.
Yeah, and a little known fact, I just read this the other day. I was reading about the Bond films because I have the entire collection.
Okay,
and I got this big documentary on it, and I was reading about Roger Moore, and he would not let them film him running in any of the Bond films because he hated the way he looked when he ran. He thought he looked dorky and awkward. So anytime you see him running, it's always where he's just like. Starting to run
or
just
slowing,
stopping.
Like when he's just doing the,
but when you
about
see,
to turn around
yeah,
to run.
Yeah, but when you see him running from a distance, it's a stuntman. Every time it's a body double. Because he didn't want anybody to film him actually running. He thought he looked stupid.
That's hilarious. I thought, I had read somewhere, and I think I even mentioned it on the podcast at one point, mm-hmm. that I had thought Roger Moore was actually gay.
Yes,
he is not.
He is not.
He is not. I apologize to Roger Moore.
No, he's he's just, I mean, he was just a little bit more of the effeminate kind of Bond.
Right.
Not that he was girly or anything. He didn't have that element of danger about him.
Yeah.
Until he was called into action to do something, then you bought him as the action guy. But.
And that's, speaking of element of danger Bond, Timothy Dalton, he had that creepy, like, element of danger
yeah,
to
did.
Him.
He had that, like, almost like that leer.
Yeah,
that he
had
that. Where you could tell he was like, I'm going to kill somebody. Especially in License to Kill.
Yes.
That was like the most Unchained Bond film I've ever seen, because he like basically just renounced him being an agent and went on a vendetta to kill this drug kingpin.
And when I saw it, 89, that was the first one I ever saw in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think
my parents, you know, because we grew up watching Bond with my old man.
Oh, yeah. I think that was the most brutal Bond up to that point.
Oh, yeah. And I was surprised. It only has a PG-13 rating.
Yep.
But then again, so did Spaceballs.
What's the year on that again?
89.
So it wasn't the first Bond with a PG-13 rating, probably.
Don't know.
Previous to that, it was The Living Daylights, and okay. I believe that was also PG-13.
But, yeah, he went rogue, and I thought it was a good movie. Timothy Dalton, crazy.
Yep.
Crazy, creepy.
Yep, because his best friend was killed at his wedding at the beginning, and he went out for revenge.
Yeah. Yep. It was awesome. It was a good movie.
It was.
And then, like, to revise his creepiness, when he was in Hot Fuzz, cracks me up. His character in Hot Fuzz.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best.
I cried during that movie. I laughed so hard.
Oh, I love that film. I love it.
We saw it in the theater, I think, opening weekend. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who I was with, but we pre-gamed it a little bit at BW3 before we walked over. And
that movie is just absolutely, it's one of the best buddy cop movies ever made, because it's got that weird amalgamation of, like, it's an homage to every buddy action film.
Yeah.
But it also has that weird, like, supernatural cult twist at the end that you
great
never really,
big bushy beard.
You don't even see it coming. You're like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah, didn't see any of it coming.
Like straight out of, that was like some Wicker Man shit at the end, you know, the whole creepy town?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Oh, it was great.
But hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Then like one of the opening scenes with Simon Pegg, he's checking into the hotel or whatever that, when he first showed up in the town, and she's doing that crossword puzzle or whatever, and she's just, she says something, blah, 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 fascist. And then, like the camera zoomed in, and when she said fascist, and he was like, what did you just call me? He was like, oh, seven-letter word. And then they finished the conversation.
Doing a crossword puzzle.
And then he's like, blah, 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 hag. And she's like, what? He's like, three-letter word for blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
She's like, oh, thank you. It was great. Great fun. I love how we get off on the tirades. Love how the 6 degrees of everything, basically, when
I know,
it comes to
everything's
movies.
Everything's related to everything else when it comes to film.
Getting back to, we had touched on The Matrix. Was that before we recorded, or was that during we whatever. We were talking about IMAX.
We were talking about the IMAX, so it was during this.
She's playing the Bond girl inspector, apparently. Monica Bellucci.
Wow.
Which was the hot French chick in the two Matrix movies.
Yes.
That made out
Persephone.
With... Persephone, yes. Made out with Keanu. And if you played Enter the Matrix, mm-hmm. the video game... there was a lot of footage filmed in that, like, actual footage with Jada Pinkett Smith or whatever, her character, and her wingman Ghost.
Yes.
There was lots of actual, Niobe was her character. There was lots of, actual footage filmed that bridges the second and third movie.
Yes, that's correct. They used the game effectively.
Oh my gosh. Oh, the game, the glitches in the game are terrible.
They are. It's not a very good
game. Did you play the game? Did you play through the whole thing?
Yep. It's not a very good game, but the way that it told the story and actually used the real actors and then tied it all together was really well done.
Because Niobe, because what brought that to me was because Niobe ends up in the Nerovigian's house, mansion, or whatever, and she ended up having to make out with Monica Bellucci in one scene.
That's right.
Because that's Persephone's thing to see if your intentions are true, basically, mm-hmm. and, you know, kiss me as you would her, or right. Because she knew that Niobe's character was still in love with, like, Morpheus, basically.
Morpheus. Yep.
But I like how the video game ties it up. Hey, you ever watching The Matrix? You remember that cool scene where Morpheus is fighting that agent on the semi, and the agent kicks Morpheus off the semi, and he lands on a car behind him, and when he looks into the car that he landed on, it's Niobe. If you're ever wondering how that happened, you have to play the video game. Because that's a random racing scene in the video game.
Right.
You're Niobe, and you have to catch up to the semi within a certain amount of time.
That's right.
And then as soon as you catch up to the semi, it goes to the movie clip where he falls onto the hood of the car. Wachowskis, hands down, they built everything, and they built it all correctly.
They did. They took a very Japanese manga-ish idea.
Yes.
And made an incredibly ahead-of-its-time trilogy.
And
like I said, psychobabble aside,
yeah.
from the second film, which had
Oof.
Way too much unnecessary yes. exposition, the film actually explained itself into a whole.
It really
that was
did.
The biggest problem.
Really did.
It was a lot. The whole everything that was going on in that movie was actually so much simpler than the way it was explained.
Yes,
it could have been easily laid out without so much exposition. But
yeah.
that being said, the fight scenes and choreography in that movie more than make up for all the psychobabble bullshit.
Revolutionized,
special effects.
Changed so much with
bullet time.
The camera on a circular track to
a sequence of cameras.
Yeah.
All the way around to capture
it. Get all of the it revolutionized.
It's mind-boggling. Even when you watch it now, the effects are still impressive.
Oh yeah.
Although bullet time led to that huge glut of movies that every movie you watched for a while, every action film had that fucking Matrix moment in it. You're like, oh my God, really?
Yeah. And then people just started making fun of it. And then
right.
and then there was Steve Odekirk Kung Fu where he's fighting the cow and it's all like Matrix style.
Kung Pao
Kung
into
Pao.
The fist?
Yeah. Kung Pao. I almost pissed myself. That movie made me laugh so hard.
That movie is hilarious.
I'm a huge fan of Steve Odekirk. Or is it Odenkirk? No, it's Bob Odenkirk.
It's Bob Odenkirk.
And Steve Odekirk.
Yep.
Okay.
Odekirk.
Because I love the thumb movies. I don't know if I have all six of them. They're terrible.
Well, he even has the thumb movie
yeah,
part in it.
His
the hand.
Yeah. I love that movie.
It's funny, too, because that movie it's one of those movies that is it's not even so bad it's good, it's just so he knew it was bad.
Oh,
and it makes it more hilarious.
Yeah, he is not by any means, he knows what he's making.
Oh, absolutely.
He's
and
a
he just
diabolical
knocked it out of the park. It's
horrible
so
comedy genius.
It's terrible good.
Yeah. And more power to him. If you haven't seen all six of the thumb movies,
I've seen them
you,
all.
Okay, have
the
you?
Star
okay.
Wars one is funny.
The Star Wars shit. One is still the best one he did.
It's funny as shit.
With a close second being, I think Bat Thumb was really hilarious.
Yeah, Bat Thumb was funny.
Bat yep. Thumb and...
Did he do an Indiana Jones one too?
No, he did Thumbtanic, Frankenthumb, the Blair Thumb Project.
Oh, that's right, the Blair Thumb Project.
I am missing one, though. Thumb Wars and Bat Thumb. I'm missing one of them. I can't remember what it was. Thumb Wars. The Phantom Cuticle. It's ridiculous.
Phantom Cuticle.
I like the scene where he's like, touch your tongue to... Oh, the God Thumb. There we go. That's the one
The
God
okay.
Thumb, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. The two best ones, though, are the Batman one and the Star Wars one.
Yep. And I didn't. He's hilarious. He's got one of those faces that when you see him, you know exactly who we're talking about.
Oh yeah.
Basically.
Yep. You'll recognize
him. Yeah. Dude, Kung Pao was so funny. The Squirrel Chucks.
Squirrel Chucks.
All right. Anyway.
Ridiculous genius.
Yeah. And if that's his actual... He's not that poorly built his actual body. Like,
yeah, it's fairly impressive for a guy who primarily is a writer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He wrote for, like... Cowboys and Aliens, apparently, Bruce Almighty, Evan Almighty, Nutty Professor 2, Patch Adams, I mean, things like that. Three episodes of In Living Color.
Oh, wow.
Oh, actually, more than just three. No, sorry, 31 episodes of In Living Color.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
He's a fairly prodigious writer.
Yeah. But getting back to Spectre, I'm glad to see Christopher Waltz in it. I think he's a good actor.
Oh, he is. He's phenomenal. I think he's only just gotten better too. Christoph Waltz probably.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Christoph. Sorry.
he's just proven time and again. I loved his work in Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah,
and I absolutely just thought he knocked it out of the park in Django Unchained as the fellow bounty hunter. Great role for him.
He's been in so much shit, but relatively unknown to the American audiences.
Right, because it's mostly, what is he?
Yeah.
He's Austrian or German?
It's like all Austrian, or probably German, whatever. Like, yep, he is, but, you know...
He's a prodigious actor.
You listeners now know him from the Hans from Inglourious Basterds. And, yeah, he was in a Three Musketeers movie that was recent. He was in Muppets Most Wanted, which I haven't seen yet.
He also is very good in the new Tim Burton film, Big Eyes.
That,
he's fantastic in that.
I saw there was... advertisements on IMDb about it.
Yeah, we went to
Is that a good movie?
Yeah, it's a true story. It's a very good film. It's one of Tim Burton's better films.
Okay.
Because it's less Tim Burton-esque than some of Tim Burton's other films. He's reined in his strangeness a bit.
Okay.
To tell a really good serious true story.
Amy Adams, you can Kristen Ritter. All right.
It's got quite a cast.
And Danny Houston. All right.
It's very good.
Nice. I'll have to see that. So, yeah. Wrapping up the episode, because we actually did make it 56 minutes.
Good for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Spectre is going to have to be a, like, opening weekend.
Absolutely, yeah.
Issue. Count me in.
Yep. I'm going to see that on the... I plan on seeing that on the IMAX.
Okay. Yeah, keep me posted because we'll make a shenanigans of it. We'll pregame it and
absolutely.
I'm in. I don't know if Sarah would be in because she's never seen a single Bond movie.
Not a single one.
We had just talked about that. She had not even seen Goonies. We're gonna have to do that tonight. Is that on Netflix? I hope so.
Goonies.
If not, I might have to borrow it from you because I know you have it.
I do, but I only have it digitally.
Oh, Bastardo. Okay. But yeah. It hasn't seen Goonies. Unbelievable.
She hasn't?
She has not seen Goonies.
I'm the first to admit. I'm the first to admit that I was not a huge Goonies fan, but you know, I appreciate the movie for what it is, and it was very Spielbergian.
Yes.
He was the producer of it.
Yep.
You could tell.
Yep.
But
all it's missing is, like, yeah.
I'm not as gaga over it as some people are.
Yeah.
I do like the movie, but it's not, like, my favorite
movie. It's a fun movie.
Mm-hmm. If I had to choose my favorite, like, kids movie, like, of that genre, I'd say Explorers is one of my favorite films with Ethan Hawke.
Oh, I don't even know if I know that
young
one.
Ethan Hawke. That was really well done.
Huh. Cool. Well, yes. Movies coming out, definitely Spectre. I don't know. Oh, Pixels.
Pixels actually looks like it's going to be quite fun.
Not a huge fan of some of the cast.
Right,
in
but
it.
The movie itself, the premise, is
yes.
awesome.
If you have not, people, watched the preview for Pixels, it's actually based on an independent work that was done on YouTube. It was a 4-minute video of Pixels invading Earth.
Nice.
Without all this story, and it's just, it's awesome. And it was actually picked up. He got a writer's credit in the movie.
Really?
Like a full writer's credit, I think. Huh. Even though I don't think he actually wrote for the movie. It's just, the whole movie is based on this short film.
Idea.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So if you look at Pixels on YouTube, I'm sure like related video on along the side, you can probably see the actual video that it was based off of. Nice. And that video was done very well.
That's awesome.
I can't think of any other movies coming out within like the next month or two.
Mad Max, Fury Road.
Oh, derp.
That's an opening weekend must see for me as well.
Yeah. So thumbs up for Furious 7. I enjoy it. If you like action movies, it's a lot of good action, and you can't...
Well, you've sold me. I'm going to go see
it. Yeah,
now.
Dude. Yeah. Jason Statham in it, too.
I mean, like you said, big, dumb fun.
Big, dumb fun. I watch Jason Statham movies because they're big, dumb fun.
Right.
And Christy and I are huge Statham fans. We've watched... I mean, I even bought, like, Death Race.
He's very clenched.
Yeah.
He's always clenched.
I bought Death Race 3000 or whatever, and it's terrible. I bought it because it was like $3.
It is terrible, but the carnage scenes in the car,
yes.
car races are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only reason to watch
yep.
it.
Yep. But her and I agreed, he always plays like a good guy.
He does.
Statham.
He's always a redeemable character.
In this one, he's the bad guy. Have we hated Statham so much.
If you actually want to see what Statham's capable of as when he's really acting and in a really good film, watch The Bank Job.
Oh.
That is a phenomenal film based on a true story.
Okay.
Recommended.
How long ago was that?
I believe that was just a few short years back.
2008.
2008, yeah.
Got it. Yeah, okay.
It was after a lot of his
stupid movies, but so they actually cast him in something not so stupid.
It's a true story. Obviously, you can tell from the title, The Bank Job, what it's about. But it's very interesting. It's a very interesting story, and he's really good in it.
Yeah, nice. My money, it doesn't get any better than Crank.
Oh God. That is still one of the most insane movies ever.
Oh, it starts out nonstop action.
Absolutely.
Right,
and
out
then,
of the, he just jumps out of a window.
Did you Why see not? Crank 2?
Yeah, I did.
Crank 2, I mean, Crank was ridiculous and over the top.
Yeah.
But Crank 2 is like this massive head fuck of a movie.
Oh yeah,
because it's so insanely over the top that it's making fun of itself at
oh,
times.
Yeah. Oh
the
yeah,
the head in the tank that's still alive. Give me a fucking break.
Yeah,
I was laughing out loud, but at the same time I was like, this movie is awesome. Because it was like it knew how ridiculous it was, and it just wanted to top itself in every.
Oh
way.
Yeah, in every way, I loved it. I thought it was going to be crap, and like Crank, I was like, this is going to be stupid. I'm going to watch it. I'll watch it for like 10 minutes.
Oh, God. It's
3 minutes in, and I was hooked.
It's a fucking visual assault on your senses. For an hour and a half, you are ceaselessly pummeled by this movie. And Crank 2, it's even worse. It's cranked up to 11.
Right. That's why it's Crank 2. High voltage.
High voltage.
Because he wakes up where the first one ended.
Exactly.
Even though there's like 5 years difference, and he doesn't look like he aged at all.
A bit. Not a bit.
Lord have mercy. All right, people. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Oh, maybe there wasn't. Oh, 3 years difference between Crank and Crank 2.
Okay,
whatever.
But still.
I actually clicked on it on Chev Chelios, the character, because I was hoping they were making a third one.
That used to be my ringtone, that phone that slowly gets, you know, weaker and weaker.
Oh.
That used to be my ringtone for the longest time.
That's awesome. All right, nerds. Thanks for listening. Watch more movies and drink more beer.
Absolutely. I second that.
Yes.
Till next time.
Till next time, yes. I was MIA last week. Lots of stuff went down. So, yeah. I might start doing the show, gang, as a every other week sort of situation. We'll see where my motivations lie. So, thanks for listening, as always. Nerd up, Buttercup. Final later, parting words.
Later, nerds.
Later. Ka-ka!
Thank you for putting up with Two Nerds, One Podcast.
That's nice, thank you.
Proud members of the Nerdissance Enterprises Network, whatever that is. Until next time, be gone, nerds.
Be good, nerd.
Like anyone's listening to this.